Welcome to episode 7 of the She Recovery podcast, hosted by me, Crystal Renaud Day. I'm an author, speaker, certified coach, and master's level pastoral counselor with over a decade of experience working with women who are facing pornography addiction and other unwanted sexual behaviors. You can learn more about my work and the services we offer at SheRecovery.com. On this week's episode, you'll hear from Marnie Faree. Marnie is a licensed marriage and family therapist from Nashville, Tennessee, where she directs Bethesda Workshops, a short-term, Christian-based intensive program for sex addicts and their partners. In 1997, she established the first gender-specific treatment for female sex addicts, and in 2018, she pioneered the first intensive workshop for female adolescent sex addicts. Her book, No Stones, Women Redeemed from Sexual Addiction, uniquely addresses this problem in women. Marnie is also the volume editor and contributing writer for Making Advances, a comprehensive guide to treating female sex and love addicts. You can learn more about Marnie and the work she does at BethesdaWorkshops.org. Welcome, Marnie, and thank you for being part of the She Recovery podcast. If you had told me, I don't know, it's 14 years ago now when I was leading, when I was leading a small group of women at my church through your book, that I would get the chance to know you and talk to you and call you my friend.
Yes.
I would not have believed it. But Marnie, thank you for being a part of our little show here.
Oh my goodness, Crystal, you are so very welcome. And I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of She Recovery and the amazing summit that you did that I got to have a small part in, and just your ministry and your help and hope for women. So it just warms my heart to see other people coming along to take up the mantle. You know, I'm an old woman by now. I'll be 65 in just a couple of months. And so it's just sweet to see others who are so capably and heartfully stepping into leadership roles in this area.
Well, we know you are the pioneer. When I refer to you in sessions with my own clients, and I refer to them to your materials, I always say you're the godmother of female sexual addiction recovery, because you are the pioneer. I've learned so much at your feet over the last 14 years.
That's sweet and very, very kind. I'm just the crazy enough person to do this. You know, God told me at my very first counseling session in 1991, when I was suicidal and so broken and went to see this Christian counselor. And I was like, you know, you know me, I love Jesus a lot, but I curse occasionally. So I'll just say it. I was like, oh, hell no, I'm not seeing a Christian counselor. And my friend promised me, no, she's not like that. And indeed, she was so graceful and actually had trained with Patrick Carnes, one of maybe 24 people in the country at that point who had. So she knew exactly how to frame my story and my pain. But anyway, after that session, I'm sitting in my car because I was way too undone to be able to drive home. And I don't guess that it was audible, but it sure was powerful and very clear. God said, you will be a missionary to women who struggle with sex addiction. Mm-hmm. And so it's just my honor that I have gotten to do that. I haven't thought of myself as a godmother, and I love that, because today, at this point in my spiritual journey, God to me is female. And so I talk to Mama God all day long. And Mama God is so very, very present with me. And it just is sweet to me to have a nurturing mother after so long. So to be a godmother myself is just, that's pretty cool. I've never been a godmother before.
Well,
faith tradition, they don't do godparents, you know, so to get to be a godmother, that's pretty cool.
Well, I do consider you that, the godmother of female sexual addiction recovery, and just this whole area of sexual brokenness in women, but not just the brokenness, but in the healing journey, and the restoration part of it.
Hallelujah. Yeah. That's the good part.
That's the good part. Yeah. And you have a good part of that story yourself.
I do.
I'd love for you to just talk about even a little bit of your story, and then really what got you into doing this work. Because I know for me, I got my healing and I was like, thanks, Jesus, I'm done. And I had no intention of ever sharing my story or being in what I do now. And so I'd just love to hear how our audience, I know your story, but I'd love to have our audience hear your story of where you've been and how you got to where you are with Bethesda Workshops.
Oh, thank you. And really kind of how I started is what I just said, that God, it was God's invitation. I didn't choose this path. God chose it and the path chose me. And so I'm grateful for that part. But before we got to that, talk about sexual brokenness. Oh my goodness. I was sexually broken before I was conceived because I came from an extraordinarily broken set of dear parents. My father is a minister. He's now long deceased, but he was a minister and a Christian educator, deeply loved God, deeply loved people, and an unrecovered sex addict. So his story was profound. It was tragic. It ultimately was very, very public and a Me Too movement in the mid-1980s as his behavior and some of his offending behavior, because he was inappropriate with male college students on the campus where he was the academic dean. So not just sexual addiction, but and not just acting out with men, but even being a perpetrator. So such a tragic, tragic story. It affected my mother, and she tragically died when I was 3 years old. So I mean, I've got the woundedness. I was sexually abused for 15 years from age 5 to 20 when I married by my father's best friend, a male. And so from all of that, just the brokenness was incredible. And I had no understanding of that brokenness. I understood only as a mid-teenager when I became very promiscuous that I was broken, and I viewed myself in that way just simply in terms of I am a whore. Mm. I had no understanding of the sexual abuse I experienced, because this man was dearly loved and cherished and respected in our family. He was kind and gracious to me. He actually was one of the most positive people in my childhood. And so I didn't understand that it was abusive until we actually started having intercourse when I was a teenager. And by then I was like, oh my goodness, I know this is like way wrong. And I completely took responsibility for myself. So lots of brokenness that ultimately led to sexual addiction. My form of acting out, fortunately, because I lived in way in the pre-internet and cell phone era, was a much more traditional, kind of old fashioned to some extent today, the love addiction, the relationship addiction. Now, it was all highly sexual, but really couched more always in terms of love and relationships and promiscuity, as I mentioned, and then multiple affairs. I lost my first marriage to affairs. We divorced. I very quickly remarried, had been married now for, we're in year number 40. So like forever.
Wow.
And was unfaithful in this marriage as well after several years in, and two children. So, of course, that added to my shame. And I think what cemented my shame was, in terms of sexual brokenness, was cervical cancer caused by HPV. So it was that experience that was my wake-up call that finally led me to very, very strong suicidal thoughts that prompted me and God's grace to ask for help and reached out to a friend, and she came to be with me. She connected me with a counselor she was very familiar with. And in 1991, that began the story. So from that point, received so much healing. This counselor literally saved my life. And and really, again, knew how to frame the story, knew how to frame it completely from sexual addiction and from all of the family systems perspective of all of the incredible dysfunction in our home that looked so, so perfect. And then knew how to begin, after she had so earned my trust, very gently and lovingly, and yet then insistently saying that I had to begin dealing with this sexual addiction, which, of course, I was like, sex addict. Oh, that's terrible. I couldn't possibly be a sex addict. I'm this sweet Southern lady, honey. I mean, I just kind of, you know, have relationships. But, you know, she was right. And so that began another journey of healing that I've now been on for, this is year 29. So that's a marvelous thing. So for me, the journey and the healing I experienced was the absolute catalyst into the work that I do. My personal mission statement biblically comes from 2 Corinthians of comforting others with the comfort that I have received. And that came to me literally almost that day in the parking lot of my counselor's office. And so it's been a very natural outgrowth. I was a journalist when I entered recovery. Had long been writing and loved being a journalist and got to write some really cool stuff for the huge major newspaper that I worked with. And I came to realize, you know what, the kind of writing I really want to do about recovery and healing and spirituality is not stuff that this newspaper is going to publish. Mm-hmm. And I want to go back to school and be able to help people in a more direct way. So did the counseling degree and licensure and all of that. Was very blessed to become well connected very early with leaders in the field. First with Dr. Mark Laser, who was a protege of Dr. Patrick Carnes. Carnes is the grandfather of the sex addiction healing movement. And Mark brought Carnes' work into the Christian community. He was the first spokesperson within the Christian community of his own story of recovery of abuse and addiction and his own training as a clinician. So I was introduced to him early from my counselor, who invited him to come speak. And we became colleagues, and then he was a mentor and then became a dear friend. Mark introduced me very early to Patrick Carnes, who also came back to Nashville to speak, and Mark was with him. And so I was so blessed. I believe it was just, you know, God's path that incredible professional doors opened to me very easily that I really had nothing to do with other than to say thank you and to be able to walk through them. So Mark Laser was already doing workshops for male sex addicts. I began to help him and a colleague in workshops for those men's wives, for partners, wives of sex addicts. And from that point in 1997, after one of those workshops, literally driving home very late one night from out of state, facilitating one of those workshops, again, God spoke to me. I mean, literally, I stopped the car and got out. And God said, you can do this for women. No one is doing anything for women who struggle with sex addiction. And here's now this framework, and you can do this. And within literally 6 weeks, I and Mark Laser came to help start it, began a program called Healing for Women. The first, as far as we know, ever, anywhere, period, gender-specific treatment for women who struggle with sex, love, and relationship addiction in 97. And so that began what today is Bethesda Workshops, and it's just morphed and changed and grown from here. And I'm so blessed to get to do it, and it redeems my pain every single day.
Oh, Marnie. Thank you for sharing that. I love your story. There's so much hope in your story. Yeah. I want to ask you, how old were you when you went back to school and got your counseling degree?
Let's see. I was 35 when I began recovery, and it was probably close to 3 years later, mid-30s, 38-ish, I guess. Took about 2 years to get the degree. I continued working as a journalist full time while I went to school to finish that. So a whole lot younger than now, that's for sure.
Well, I asked that because, you know, I talk to women all the time, and they're stuck. In a lot of what I do, I'm a coach, and so I coach women. I think more so than even counseling them a lot of the time, and they feel like they're stuck or it's too late to do what, you know, God has created them to do. And I look at my story. I think I was 28 when I went back to school, and I had nothing. I had no degree at all at that time. In fact, I had failed out of college at 19 with a 1.7 GPA, just in the throes of my addiction.
Yeah. Aww.
And of course I graduated several years ago now, but, I think about your story, you're 40 really coming into your calling, and what God has created you and designed you to do, but also based on your journey, your story, what you've been through. There's so much. I don't think you have to have a story to be effective in helping people, but I certainly think that there's an extra surge of power in that.
Yes, absolutely.
Just as the Corinthians verse suggests, you know, that we do comfort others with the comfort we've been given, knowing we've been where they are, and we know that there's a way out. Just like the, you know, you crawl in the pit with them, you know how to get out of it.
Exactly. I believe that with all my heart, Crystal. I really do. Yes, you can be effective without the story. I mean, look, you know, aren't still the majority of OBGYNs men? I'm like, really? What in the world do you know about any of this? I'm glad that's changing. But there's just something completely different when, as a woman to a woman, you can say, me too.
Yeah.
I get it. And I love that. And I love that about what I get to do. And I love that about what you're doing for women.
Well, Marnie, just thank you again for sharing that part of your story and being a vessel, allowing God to use you in this way. Because I can't begin to imagine the numbers of women that your story and your life and your work has impacted, but it will continue for many, many years to come, I know. So, looking at addiction, we'll just dive into some other conversation here. Looking at addiction, I think one of the questions I get a lot is, do I have an addiction or do I have dependency or a compulsion to whatever it is, sex, masturbation, porn, relationships, love? Can you define this for those who are curious about their own journey of whether they're walking through an addiction or what they may be going through?
Sure. It's a great question, and I want to answer it, and then I want to say something else further about the answer. The answer is there are four classic components of what makes something an addiction. So let's just think about pornography, for example. One can be looking at pornography and not addicted to it. Mm-hmm. I don't think for very long because it's highly addictive, but just for the sake of conversation, yes, you can. So it's not a matter of how much or how long. That's kind of like asking an alcoholic asking, you know, how many drinks do I have to drink to be an alcoholic? Mm-hmm. There are other things than what somebody's doing. And there are four of them. The first is obsession. That addiction, compulsions as well, are obsessive. It becomes the organizing principle of life. For me, it felt like there was a little bird always sitting on my shoulder, always talking to me, always saying, in my example, well, when can I connect again with this fair partner? No, you can't take your kids outside to play even, because the only phone was on the wall in the kitchen. And that might be when he would call, you know, just organizes your life and it's always on my mind. You're always thinking about it. That's first. The second is the biggest characteristic of an addiction, and that's compulsion. That's I keep doing what I don't want to do despite my best efforts to stop. Mm-hmm. So for all of us, there comes that point if we are fully addicted. There are people who say, well, yeah, I had a pornography problem, but I just decided it was wrong and it wasn't good for me and I was going to quit. And I did. Mm-hmm. Well, good for you. You're not an addict.
Right.
You're not an addict. You are someone maybe who was, quote, dependent, or at least for surely you were undisciplined in that area of your life, like undisciplined drinking alcohol, but you're not an addict. An addict, yes, addictions begin with a choice. You have that choice to smoke the first cigarette or to take the first drink or to first look at pornography or flirt with somebody with whom it's not appropriate for you to be flirting with because, like, maybe you're married to somebody else or something. Mm-hmm. It starts with a choice, but a true addiction in the moment, that opportunity for choice is removed because of a lot of other factors. And so you keep doing something that you even really don't want to do anymore, and you're powerless to stop. That's the biggest hallmark of an addiction. The third characteristic is, and I keep doing this despite significant consequences. I had enormous consequences in my life. I lost a marriage. I was completely ostracized from my entire family, who disowned me in a form of religious spiritual abuse because I was getting divorced and therefore going straight to hell. I then got married again, and I had affairs, and I had cervical cancer and kept having unprotected sex with this affair partner, presumably passing HPV back and forth to each other. I mean, that's crazy. And I couldn't/didn't stop. So when clearly this is not working for you and you keep doing it, then that's the second biggest sign of an addiction. And then the fourth is it creates tolerance. It takes more and more and more. I'm looking at this cup of coffee sitting beside me. We're taping this in the middle of the afternoon. This is maybe cup number six. You know, I'm awfully tolerant to coffee. I could drink a cup number nine at 9 p.m. and go to sleep. Okay. It doesn't, am I addicted? I don't know. I actually never stop drinking enough to find out if I get a headache if I don't. But it's coffee. I drink it black. It doesn't make my life unmanageable, except I have to go to the bathroom a lot. But, you know, but that's tolerance. Most people don't drink near that much coffee and for sure couldn't drink it at night and go to sleep. That's tolerance. So those are the four hallmarks of addiction. So let me stop there a second and just ask, does that make sense? Do you have questions about that? And then I want to say a few other things about it.
No, that's very clear.
Okay, cool. Now to the nuance of the question, is it an addiction? Is it a compulsion? Is it dependence? Yes. Yes. I have all this, you know, supposedly super duper clinical training and these, you know, silly initials after my name. There's some fights within the addictive community. Is this really an addiction model? Does it work better in a compulsion model? I think that's ridiculous. I think it doesn't matter. Many of us, at least within the addiction community, use the term addiction and compulsion interchangeably because, as I just explained, compulsion is a huge factor in addiction. So I don't really think it matters. Are you dependent? That term is used more around substances than it is around behaviors. But I mean, sure you are. But to tease out those kinds of nuances, I think, is just a mental gymnastics exercise that isn't helpful. And I think being helpful to the women who are and others who are listening is what we want to do. But then the other thing I want to say about this part of the conversation, Crystal, is in some ways, whether or not you are addicted doesn't matter. And here's what I mean by that. Okay, if you're not this in the gutter drunk, you know, this absolutely fully compulsive alcohol dependent type person, great, good for you. That helps a lot if you're not all the way on the end of the addictive continuum. But if you're even asking yourself that question, you have a problem. You are doing behaviors that engaging in things and having relationships, doing behaviors that you're concerned about, at least your better self is concerned about, that perhaps are beginning to cause a problem in your life. So let's do something about it now before you continue down that road to get into that area that you're just clearly, oh my goodness, yes, that I'm a full-blown sexaholic, sex and love addict, whatever you want to call your pornography-aholic, pornography addict. So I think the most more important question for people who are asking that one is, so what do you think? Is this causing a problem in your life? Would you like to learn how to do this differently.
Yeah, absolutely. I love, love, love that. So the question, I guess, to ask next in light of that is whether the person listening is like knows that they are the alcoholic drunk
right.
addiction issue, or these behaviors are troublesome to me and I want to get a grip on them before they mm-hmm. take too deep a grip on me.
Right.
What are the steps? First steps different? And if so, what are the steps that someone should be taking?
That's a great question. And I would say one of the reasons that it doesn't matter where on that continuum you are is that all the steps are the same. It's just easier. The steps and the journey will ultimately be both somewhat easier and shorter for the person who's not as far down the road as someone who was like, you know, driven off the cliff like mm-hmm. I had. So the steps, the first is to just get honest with yourself, to just say, is this working for me? Does this jive with my value system? Not in a shaming yourself way, but just say, you know, am I okay? Do I think it's okay to be doing XYZ? Or does my better self at least believe, no, this is not healthy, helpful, in line with God's best path for me. So to get honest enough with yourself. And if somebody's asking the question, then they have it. Again, that's kind of a fluid thing sometimes, but still a part, at least for long enough to ask the question is honest with herself. And then the next step is to get honest with other people. Hmm. And again, that's where something wonderful, like creating a forum like She Recovery, where women can come together and say, yes, this is a struggle for me, this beautiful female face and body. Yes, women struggle with this too. Because for years, women were the absolute silent, hidden, very shamed and shameful and shameless minority of people who were presumed to struggle with pornography, sex, love, relationship, addiction. And so to have a place where women can connect with other women is wonderful, but a hurting, struggling, troubled person needs other safe people to talk to and to say, yes, this is my journey. And at least there's a part of me that wants help because I'm saying this now to you.
Hmm. Absolutely. Where does counseling fit in?
I think counseling is very helpful and I would say almost necessary for many, many of the individuals, but let's say keep it for women who struggle, particularly if there's trauma in their background, they are going to need the help of a licensed, trained clinical counselor. I believe that. Mm-hmm. And so many of us women have, one in four of us have been overtly sexually abused. And 100% of us have been sexualized, have been harassed at some level, mm-hmm. whether it's the cat calls or whatever. We live in this so unbelievably screwed up sexual culture, the misogyny, the patriarchy. We as women have really been through it. So there's stuff for all of us, but particularly when it's overt sexual abuse, then counseling is needed. If someone is really struggling with depression, with anxiety, with PTSD, some of those kinds of issues, then they're not going to need the help of a counselor. What I think, though, we almost need more of are what you've mentioned that you're doing a lot of, though I'm aware as well, you have completed or in process for a clinical degree?
Yeah, I'm non-clinical, but I have completed my master's degree in pastoral counseling. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. We need more coaches. We need more frontline people who can just be alongside in a different way than a clinical counselor can be. They need to have lots of training. It's not just, oh, gee, I'm going to be a coach. You know, this is still a thing, a real thing that needs training. I think it needs certification. There's some very good and responsible and respected coaching certifications out there. Mm-hmm. I think ideally a coach, at least in the area of addictions or mental health, behavioral health, is going to be a person personally in recovery. I think, like we were talking in the beginning, I think that that helps. It's the AA model, one hurting alcoholic person helping another, one drunk helping another, they call it. So I think that's a wonderful thing. Many of the coaches, some are just, for lack of a better word, secular. I think many of them are faith-based, and that's awesome. That's great. They can bring in that spiritual component. But we need more safe people in the church. But I really think recovery coaches is the, I mean, it's absolutely the exploding, the blossoming field out there, the field of coaching. And I think that's right on. I think that's exactly the best frontline help.
And I agree with that wholeheartedly. I think there's a place for the clinical and there's a place for the, for the coaching. I'm somewhere in the middle, I would say, at this point in my journey. But my team specifically that I have here at She Recovery and Living on Purpose, like I'm consistently looking for new coaches, because we are bombarded by women who are in need, which is a, I guess, a great thing, but also a sad thing. Sure.
But it's a great.
Yeah. And so we need women to be trained. We need women to, who have been somewhere, who have been through this, who are on the other side, get trained and allow God to use that part of your story to help to come alongside other women and do what only you can do through Him, which is relate to someone, help them, support them, encourage them on this journey, because there is a purpose for your story. There's a purpose for your pain. And I believe that by helping others is where we really, I personally get, like you said before, more and more healing myself by helping other women.
Oh, yes. We benefit from what we give away.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So for the woman who is listening, let's say she is single, which I get a lot of. There's a lot of single women who are going to be listening to this podcast right now, who are in recovery. They are achieving sobriety. They are working on their underlying roots and issues, getting healing. And yet they, because they're single, and I know it's married women who would hear this as well and think that's me too, but what do you do with the unfulfilled desire for physical intimacy when you're on the other side in recovery, because now you're no longer masturbating, you're no longer having inappropriate sexual relationships? What do you do with that unfulfilled desire?
Oh, isn't that the $1 million question?
It is. That's why I'm asking you.
Oh, wow. Well, let's ask God. Let's ask Mama God, because I think that's a big one. I think first that the solution is not to shut down your sexuality. And that often is what religious church circles say. Just don't, and don't think about it and whatever. And I don't think that's the right solution. God made us sexual beings. And it's how we're made. It's part of our femininity. It's part of our sensuality. I believe it's part of our spirituality. And so to be able to celebrate yourself as a woman, and just the self-care and the pampering in the bubble baths and the exercise and all of those kinds of things is a part of celebrating your sexuality, to be aware. If you're a young woman, and so therefore you're still menstruating and stuff, there are going to be ebbs and flows just tied to your hormones and to your cycle of where you feel more sexual. Mm-hmm. And instead of like, oh my gosh, I woke up from a dream and I feel aroused. Okay, welcome to being a woman. Mm-hmm. I mean, to just accept that. I don't know if you even really want to go here, but I'm just going to say it, and you can edit this out if you don't want to. This is maybe radical. I am not convinced that for the single woman that masturbation is completely off the table. If masturbation has been a part of pornography, then the pornography for sure is off the table. If you can occasionally, often I hear women talk about it is tied to this cycle, to their hormonal stuff, not have it be part of euphoric recall and all of the pornography images and all of that kind of stuff, but simply a matter of attending to your body. I get routine massages, for example, mm-hmm. as have for 25 years as part of an autoimmune recovery, self-care plan and all kind of stuff. And to just experience just that physical of a massage, obviously a non-sensual, I can only see a woman and all of that kind of stuff. This, you know, completely legit, for lack of a better word, therapeutic massage, just that touch is really, really helpful to me and to my body. Mm-hmm. If in that analogy, a woman without pornography, without euphoric recall, when she's single, so marital partnered sex is not a part of her appropriate activity. I think we are sometimes too rigid about that. Now, there are differences of opinion. Take what you like and leave the rest. And if you or your readers or your listeners don't agree with that, that's fine. It's much harder for women in recovery to be able to achieve that. I think there needs to be a long, long period of complete sexual abstinence, and it needs to be in complete accountability and vulnerability with a coach, with maybe it's a 12-step sponsor, with the other group of women. So this isn't a oh my goodness, I'm just so stressed, so I'm going to go masturbate because that's going to make me feel better, you know, type of thing with frequency and all of that. But I just think God made us that way, to experience pleasure and sexual pleasure. And I've changed my thinking on that in the years that I've been in this field. But regardless of that or not, I think the much, much deeper question is, what do I do with all these desires and longings of my heart? Mm-hmm. And so it might be for women who are married and yet their husbands have not also embraced recovery. Their husbands have not taken their own personal journey of healing from whatever their side is, whether that's the codependency side, that I see addiction as a systemic issue. So it affects people more than just the person who's struggling. If they're partnered, it affects that partner just as much too. And there are all kinds of dynamics in that. And so if he has not entered recovery, if he hasn't learned how to really show up emotionally, spiritually, mentally, if he hasn't learned how to be present and all of those kinds of things, there is the equal void. In fact, in my experience and the women I work with, it is worse than being single.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is absolutely worse. Mm-hmm. And so the question still remains, what do I do with those desires? And how do I, in healthy and appropriate ways, live my life like that? Well, I think you live it deeply in the company of other women. I know there are deep, dear sisters in my life, a small handful. I could not live my life without them. They sustain me. They nourish me emotionally. I called and talked with two of them today. Because today has been a fairly hard day for me for other reasons. And so we need people who can go there with us emotionally and spiritually and relationally. And just because you're married does, sadly, not necessarily mean that your husband's going to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Because you can't make it. And so we need our company of women. We need the most deep relationship with God. I think I mentioned, perhaps it was as you and I were chatting before we started this podcast, but I think I mentioned it as we were recording about my mama God. You know, the prevailing view of God is masculine, and that fits. God is actually a genderless being, I'm certain, but we can only understand the way our minds can construct, you know. And of course, there are all kinds of father images for God, but there are mother images too. And to me, taking those longings of my heart from all of my attachment issues, and particularly the attachment breach with my mother, because she passed away when I was so small, to take that and let a loving mama God hold me metaphorically and love me and nurture and support and sustain me and commune with me, that's a holy desire. And these desires deserve to be met. And to shut down our desires is too often what the church, you can't see my air quotes, but you know, what the religious folks say is recovery. It's not.
Well, Marnie, I thank you for all of that. I'm not going to edit a piece of that, because I do think that everyone listening must come to their own conclusions.
Yes, I believe that.
When it comes to masturbation and all of these issues, in terms of, is that something that is okay for me? I think about the book Pulling Back the Shades, not to mention somebody else, but Julie Slattery and Dana Gresh wrote Pulling Back the Shades. And part of their conversation in there is to ask questions in light of a grid of, it does it master me? Does it
Yes.
it help, does it help me to grow? And several questions like that, where you do have to look at issues like masturbation and say, is this something that is it always a no? Or is there a place for it in a healthy way where I'm not using it for coping or as medicine or anything like that, but that it's, as a single woman, I'm not single anymore, but as a single woman, I did use it from time to time because my body went through all kinds of those ebbs and flows and changes. And you know what? Sometimes it happened. I'm not going to be ashamed about that. And understanding that, and I'm glad that you pointed it out, that you do need to have a long-term, you know, abstinence and sobriety to get to the other side of the compulsion part.
Yeah,
because it's very easy to fall back in to those old coping skills and old coping behaviors. But I agree in all the things you were talking about. So I'm not going to edit any of it and let people come to their own conclusions. Because even my own, like you said, how we feel about these things based on who we work with, I think it changes over the course of time. I've done this work 14 years. You've done this work for, I guess, 30.
Almost 30, yeah.
And our approaches do change over time as we get to understand addiction more. And kind of fall away a little bit from the purity culture mentality. Yeah, the rigidity of even religious
points. And Lord, deliver us from the purity culture.
Yeah, and I do believe in God's standard for sex and sexuality and how He's designed it. Do I think masturbation is how He designed us? I don't know. I'm not going to go into that debate right now, but I do think that there can be a place for it without shame.
Yeah.
I think that's the important thing to end on. But Marnie, thank you so much. How can those who are listening learn more about you and Bethesda Workshops and what you have to offer?
Oh, thank you. We have a very comprehensive website, Bethesda Workshops, for with an S.org. The name is the name of the program, not a place. We're actually in Nashville, Tennessee, but comes from the story in John 5 of Jesus asked the man lying at the pool of Bethesda, do you want to get well? And it's a clarifying the beginning question. So we have a very comprehensive website. I would love for people to know about my book, No Stone, Women Redeemed from Sexual Addiction. It's available off Amazon. It's both a print book and an ebook that talks about all of these kinds of things. I would love for women to consider a Healing for Women workshop. It's a 4-day clinical, Christian-based, grace-based, affirming intensive Wednesday through Saturday on scheduled weeks for women, led by women, who are struggling with any of these forms, pornography, love, sex, relationship addiction. It's a marvelous, huge jump start into the healing process. So that might could be a resource for women. So our website, my email is on the website. I get hundreds and hundreds of emails, and it takes me longer than I would like to respond to them. And I really do my best to respond. Can't give a whole lot of advice and all of that kind of stuff, but certainly can't do clinical counseling via email. And I'm love hearing from people, and will almost, it's very rare that I don't respond. And then it's just gotten so lost down in my email. So email me again. But thank you for sharing some about the specific work that God allows me to do.
Oh, absolutely. We will link to Bethesda Workshops and all of Marnie's website and all of her books and things like that in the listener notes. And we encourage you to check those out. Marnie, thank you again for being a part of our podcast.
Oh, thank you, Crystal. Many blessings on you. Hug, hug.
Thank you for listening to the She Recovery Podcast, a resource of SheRecovery.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with those who you think will enjoy it too. And be sure to subscribe to never miss a new episode each week. You can also visit SheRecovery.com/podcast to access the listener notes for this episode, as well as to access our Patreon page. You can show your support of the She Recovery Podcast and SheRecovery.com by becoming a patron. Patrons receive exclusive content, recovery tools, and even She Recovery merchandise that is not found anywhere else. Thank you for your support, and I hope you'll join me again next week for a new episode of the She Recovery Podcast.